I hope and pray that I got the phone situation here together. I just wound up buying a separate phone for this to get the cheap rate. And I'm hoping it works fine. But other problems came, and that in shifting from Vrindavan to Govardhan, I left the Brihat Bhagavatamrita in Vrindavan, so I'm going to pick it up in a few days. So what I'm going to do today, and I'll continue it Wednesday, is I'm going to speak a little bit about this section of Narada Bhakti Sutras, which is a very interesting section. And I had to, you know, I just found out about an hour ago that my notes and my book weren't here. So I kind of looked around and I kind of think that this would probably be the best thing to do. So I think it's also the part in Narada Bhakti Sutras I'm up to is really relevant. And I'm just relieved to be back with all of you because I've missed three classes in a row, and that's kind of between the Wednesdays and Sundays, that's kind of quite unusual for me. I think one of the successes of this course is that it's consistent. You can make it part of your schedule because I have had it very, very regularly. I believe we're celebrating over our fifth year doing it. And I guess many of you, therefore, have heard over, we say a class a week and there's 52 weeks a year, many of you heard almost, you know, 250 classes. And the main way in which the devotion is inspired is through hearing. As Prabhupada said, hearing is the first principle. It's shravanam kirtanam. And hearing means both the philosophy, the tattva, the science, and the rasa, the love you have for Krishna is being inspired by hearing about Krishna. And they are connected. Because without the philosophy, you won't hear about Krishna in the proper way. I've mentioned many, many times, and, you know, we spoke many, many times that, you know, what we hear is very, very much filtered by how our mind perceives things. There's an interpretive process. And that interpretive process is very often prejudicial. When you are prejudiced, you're coming to a conclusion about something really before you even hear it. And when you hear it, you've already come to the conclusion. In other words, when you hear something, you've already come to a conclusion beforehand. You know, in the classic way, civil rights. You know, here's a person. You already judge they're bad. So when you experience and see them, even if they're good, you'll see them as bad. So it's the same thing in terms of Krishna's pastime. We have prejudicial views. We have preconceived notions. So philosophy is very, very important. At the same time, when it is presented in the proper way, a presentation that accommodates, I don't know if accommodates, but is aware, the presentation is aware of our prejudices, our common prejudices, on what we think boy and girl is, which is a opportunity to stimulate our senses, where when we talk about Radha and Krishna, the concept is that they are meeting, but there's no desire for physical contact. There's only desire that the senses of the other is pleased, not and it's secondary whether I do it or not. So there's a concept of pure love that in the Narada Bhakti Sutras is ascribed only to the conception of divinity. Somehow when you love everything, when you love everything, that's somehow connected with real love. And again, loving everything doesn't mean to exclude anything either. You're loving others because they are part of everything. But somehow or other, there's a concept, and I really need to think about it more deeply, what the logic or reason behind it, but the concept is there, that loving God, truly loving God, is connected with a parama prema, a pure love, where there's not any tinge of selfishness. And actually, what's going to be presented in the verses that is coming up, and I really, really had to research this and think about this and consult with others, it's going to use the example of the gopis as an exemplar of love. And it's going to make the point that the gopis are aware of Krishna's divinity. It doesn't cover their relationship with Krishna. It doesn't change their relationship with Krishna. Your mother, your Yashoda, you're the gopis, you're the cowherd boys. The awareness that your beloved is God doesn't change your feelings towards the beloved in your relationship and morph them in to a different type of mood of awe, reverence, and distance. But what's going to be discussed in these verses, that if there is not some awareness, and there's going to be references from the Bhagavatam, if there's not some awareness that that's God, then their level will, then the level of the gopis' love will somehow degrade to temporal and selfish. I really struggle trying to understand this point, but all I know is that's what it said, and that's what the philosophy is. I like a little bit more to hone in on the logic and reason of it. But there's an awareness. So I thought, because we are reading Brihad Bhagavatamrita, we should, it's a good idea to understand this section, because Brihad Bhagavatamrita, as we have discussed and studied, is going to talk about that highest, most intimate love. And here the point is, which is not so much stressed, and according to commentators that I'm reading on these verses, sometimes misunderstood, that the gopis had no cognizance of Krishna's divinity. Well, here it says, there is cognizance of Krishna's divinity. A pinch of cognizance of Krishna's divinity. But it never covers their madhurya. And they want to make the point that this madhurya, or intimate or sweet, it's not ordinary madhurya. Madhurya is towards God with some type of cognizance, awareness of God, but an awareness that only increases the maduria or the sweetness. God is my lover. God is my son. God is my friend. And the awareness that he is the greatest, which includes his maduria. His greatness includes, and in fact, it's the dominant part of his greatness, is that he is sweet as a friend, as a lover, as a child. And that's so powerful that the Aishvarya or conception of majesty recedes to the background. Recedes to the background. And those who have that mood, like Prabhupada, I really, really dwelled on this point. You know, Prabhupada didn't talk so much about the gopis. It's actually his glory that he never cheapened them and never used them for his own aggrandizement. You want to attract people to yourself as guru? Talk about the gopis. And talk about the gopis, and talk about the gopis, and talk about the gopis. Even if people think, wow, this is great, because it's boy and girl, and the highest thing is sex life, and that's what I want to hear about. Prabhupada was only interested in the service of Krishna. There was no self-indulgence in his consciousness. But at the same time, when he did talk about Krishna, the madhurya was so obvious that even though Vrindavan, you know, has jeweled pathways and it also has palaces, practically everything besides the madhurya of Krishna, the background, recedes into a simple village. Because he was, when he spoke about Krishna, Krishna, when he spoke about Krishna, he understood Krishna's heart. What can be more beautiful than Krishna? What can be more beautiful than Krishna and the gopis? As the ultimate reality of rasa, an overwhelming experience of love. And what a beautiful concept of divinity. That the absolute reality is an aesthetic experience, an overwhelming aesthetic experience, a purity and love and devotion to the highest degree, which you can enter in by understanding and hearing about it and aspiring for it. And if it touches your heart, then you become completely inspired to give up everything that is anartha, that has no value to that objective. Have to say that Vrindavan is a great inspiration for that. Before I get back to the verse, and we'll continue this because it's so beautiful, is greetings from Govardhan. Today, I just went on a half a parikram. We spent about 6 hours really, really, really super group. Super enthusiastic, super inspired. Very, very nice people. We have about 32 people. And we did a lot of japa, sitting on the sand, sitting in sacred ashrams. People bathed in Govinda Kund. And it worked. There are five most potent items of devotional service. And when you engage in them, under guidance and with intensity, they affect you with their own potency, which is bhakti and devotion. And it's a great treasure for me to see the people transform and their level of gratitude for getting the thing that they always wanted in their life, which is a heart filled with love. And it happens in a very nice way. Just kind of a funny story in this regard. We're sitting in this one old ashram, Govinda Kund, where an all-star cast of really mystic bhaktas would reside, and they have their pictures there, and I like to go, and it's very, very quiet. We just sat and chanted japa there. And then I noticed there was one lady there. I try to be personal. I try to know all the people that are there, ask people their names, exchange in that way. That's my nature. I noticed one girl, which I didn't notice from really the group of people I knew from Moscow or the people I took around Vrindavan. And I overheard that she spoke perfect English, like really good English. So we got finished with the japa session. I called her over and I just said, "Where are you from?" She says, "Moscow." And we started walking on the Prikram path and I started to talk to her. And it was kind of interesting. And many people said this about me. It's going a little bit off the philosophy, excuse me. But when I wear a baseball cap, many people say, "You look just like Steven Spielberg." So this lady said to me, "You know, you look exactly like someone I used to work for." I said, "What do you do? What did you do?" She said, "I'm a interpreter of English, and I work with theater people that come." And she said, "Steven Spielberg came, and I became friends with him because I became his interpreter." Anyway, I'm getting off track, but it wound up in a nice way that she was very interested in Krishna consciousness. Anyway, I went to Vrindavan. There's other places I went to. Let's get back to the story. Okay, Sutra 21, Yata Vraja Gopikanam. The coward women of Vraja are an example of pure bhakti. So what happened here in the Narada Bhakti Sutras is examples were given. Narada is narrating what is bhakti. So the first example is quoting from Vyas that bhakti is to worship. Bhakti means to put God in the center and move your life around him. Well, with Mahamuni, we had a discussion, and gave me a nice definition of ritual. You know, to conform your life to something greater than you. That's really bhakti. If you think of what a great devotee is, there are people who move their life around something greater than themselves. And look at on one saint, let's call, on one end of the spectrum, let's call that saint, and let's call the other thing sinner. And what's a sinner? You know, who's simply conforming their life around their own desire to the exclusion of the needs and interests of others. So that nice definition of bhakti, says, Vyas talks about bhakti in this way. It's anurag puja. It's worship with anurag that follows a sense of love and devotion. And what does love and devotion do? Love and devotion moves you to the periphery and puts another in the center. At least putting the needs of that person in the center. Even a parent and a child. The need, if you love the child, you don't spoil the child, but the needs of the child becomes the center, and the parent in real love is willing to make any sacrifice for their child. The pure sense of that, the highest sense of that, the liberated sense of that, is bhakti. Then he says, Gargarishi says that bhakti is to hear about God. What is love? How does love manifest? Love manifests in a desire to hear about your beloved. To chant and hear about your beloved. So if you look at it, what is a bhakta? What is an advanced devotee? He's a person who's chanting and hearing about Krishna. That's their life. That's their discussion with you. That's their relationship with you. Of course, you know, if you're that level of devotee, you may have to adjust to some degree according to a person's adhikari. But that's your interest. That's your prime desire. And I can't stress enough, I've probably said it enough times, the exact correlation between your desire to hear about truth, your desire to hear about God, and your level of spiritual advancement. So it's a great standard for devotion. What do you like to talk about? And then Sandila says, and they give another person, Sandila says that bhakti is removing obstacles to atma rati, the joy of the self. Now, the joy of the self is service. So another way of looking at bhakti is unobstructed expression of the soul. which is devotion. Then Narada concludes it, not contradicting. Narada concludes that what real devotion is when everything is dedicated to God, and when there is pain when it's not. That's real devotion, real love. That it's a consuming desire to serve Krishna with the mind, with the body, with the words. And in anxiety, when that is obstructed or stopped. So Narada says, this is real bhakti. And that dedication can be, you know, directly Krishna consciousness or worldly activities, but there's a cognizance of that. That I am part of God, everything else is part of God, and everything is meant to be engaged in God's service. Now, there may be various ways in which you have to negotiate that and do that, but that is the internal objective. And you can't tolerate when you stop that. So that's what Narada said. So now when he came to that definition, then he comes and he says in Narada Bhakti Sutras, the exemplars for that consummate absorption in Krishna's service and the dedication to Krishna's service and the absorption of mind, bodies, and words in Krishna's service and the abject distress, when that is somehow stopped, the exemplars for that is the gopis. Whether you are attracted to being a cowherd boy, whether you're attracted to worship God in reverence, the standard for really what is bhakti is the gopis. And the Panchayat, the five chapters about the gopis, exemplifies that in a very, very exemplary way. Because if you see the stories of the gopis getting beyond the boy-girl dichotomy, and if you just look at the gopis, the stories of the gopis from the levels of their consciousness, that's what's going on. They are attached to Krishna. And from the school of bhakti, that attachment, that desire to serve, is the nature of the soul. And when the nature of the soul is manifest to the highest degree of richness, it's the gopis. Krishna, 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 Krishna. All they want is Krishna. And when there is no Krishna, there is no life. They're tormented. Krishna is their life. Without Krishna, they're tormented. And in all parts of their existence, whether in union or separation, that consuming spiritual nature to be connected to God for the purpose of His pleasure, which is the universal interest or the universal pleasure. If you just like kind of try to not go beyond the lila, but look at the consciousness behind the lila, or look at the existential reality behind the lila, there are particles of consciousness that are meant of Krishna and for Krishna, and are receptacles for an energy from that God that flows through their hearts and flows towards God of loving Him. And that's the reality. There's intense love in reality, and we're meant to participate in it. And what Krishna book says, what the 10th canto says is, this is what it looks like. But don't get sidestepped by what it looks like. Try to enter into what it feels like. It feels like that which we treasure the most. Sacrifice, surrender, and love. And you see that when Krishna blows his flute. You know, I went to Vamsivat. I took this group of devotees to Vamsivat. And it was really beautiful. We walked there from the Krishna Balaram Mandir. But first we walked to this place called Setistan, and I have to tell you about this Setistan. Seti means bamboo, the place of bamboo. Probably in the farthest place on the Parikram path from where the Krishna Balaram Mandir is, on the very opposite side, there's an ashram, must be about at least 5 acres, 10 acres, I don't know. But the sadhus live there exactly as the 6 Goswamis live there. It's a beautiful thing. They're not Wi-Fi'd or connected. There's no phone. There's no electricity. But the opulence is clean, thick, white sand. Dust of Vrindavan. So I took these devotees and I said, let's just go and sit in the forest of Vrindavan. And we just did japa. We just chanted japa. And I guided the people a little bit, and they got very, very deep in japa. We chanted for about a half hour when the sadhu's there. And you may have seen them in Vrindavan. They have mud all over their faces. They just put the dust of Vrindavan all over their faces. And it was kind of like one of those, you chant Hare Krishna and a door in Vrindavan opens to the spiritual world, where they said, why don't you come to Arti? So we went, we walked into this large temple complex, and we started to walk around. It's kind of like, you know, we're walking on verandas and going through tunnels and walking, and it seemed like we were just ascending. And then we wound up. It was like a mystic where it was. We wound up in this beautiful Radha Krishna temple. And the deities had a cover, but the rest was outside in the forest. And in front of it, it was just there was no marble floor. It was just thick, beautiful white sands of Vrindavan. And then the Arti came, and the most beautiful, from the heart, classical rag, chanting songs that sounded exactly like the best of the Gregorian chants, you know, with that cadence, and it was just beautiful. Then we went out there, and then I walked to Gopeshwar Mahadev. Take the blessings of Lord Shiva. Then we entered Vamsivat, where Krishna blew the flute. The flute amplifies the heart. and that heart is expressed to those who relish that heart. And part of that heart is a love for whom it is calling. And then the gopis hear that, and they leave everything, and they come to Krishna. And then they're with Krishna, and they dance with Krishna, and then Krishna disappears. And then they have an abject madness, which manifests in them beginning to imitate the pastimes of Krishna. One lady puts her sari in the air with her finger. I'm lifting Govardhan Hill. So there's a depth that's expressed, which can't, their essence of their love, their mind, their bodies, still dedicated to Sri Krishna. Day and night, they would think about him, chant his glories, constantly with a choked voice of emotion. And they're seeing Krishna everywhere. And Krishna himself recognized that I cannot repay you. Because your connection with me okay, the local music starts to come. Cannot repay you. Pariyeham. You fixed your mind to such a degree that it cut asunder any connection to anything that was not rooted in the eternal. That was not rooted in the universal. And then Krishna sent, he sent the message to the gopis. In tears as he was writing it. And he's explaining to Uddhava, you send this message. He's crying and he's explaining. They've given their mind, but their life, everything for my sake. And they've taken refuge, shelter, in that relationship. Again, with the understanding that what our sustenance is not food. Because we're so, we're not dependent on the body on the highest level. We don't live by food. We're eternal. We have an essence that's independent of anything external besides God, which is not external. And there's a shelter there. In that relationship, I am finally satisfied. I'm a receptacle for love. And in relationship with God, that receptacle is filled to the brim. And only when the heart is filled to the brim with love, true love, universal love, only at that point does one actually have shelter. Because that is the real need. So Krishna was saying, they have that. They've taken refuge. And I have to stand by those who give up everything for my sake. So, in feelings of separation from me, Uddhava, they're only living with that assurance I gave them that I will return. And then when Uddhava came to Vrindavan, he found that they were completely immersed in Krishna. It was the highest and most intense love. I actually have a commentary in the Narada Bhakti Sutras, both the one done by Prabhupada and says his disciples. Most of the verses were done by Satsrup Marj. And I'm going over the purports, and I have to say, I mean, I have a pretty high standard, and what Satsrup Marj did, excellent, scholarly, in context, very, very thorough. I also have this other commentary called, it's the Narada Bhakti Sutras, The Philosophy of Love by Hanuman Prasad Poddar, who was the founder of Gita Press, who Prabhupada met. And it's kind of interesting in one sense. So here it says, the gopis are the exemplars. Describes their love. And then Narada Bhakti Sutras makes the statement, in this state, too, there is no forgetfulness in the gopis of knowledge of Krishna's glories. So this understanding that they're aware. And I was trying to figure out where this is discussed, because I want to write a I'm finishing up a commentary in Narada Bhakti Sutras, where this was discussed. And then what came to my mind, it was in a commentary on Rag Vartman Chandrika. It's by Vishwanath Chakrabarti Thakur, and he discusses himself that this is where I got that point, that Madhurya is not just intimacy, it's intimacy with God, in cognizance of God, in a way in which it doesn't cover one's sentiment, intimate sentiment with God, but rather enhances that intimate sentiment. It's just like, what can I do? I give examples of my mother, but after all, I lived with her for so many years, so... And she likes to hear when I'm successful. She likes to hear that I'm a guru. She talks about my big birthday parties. She wants to know how many gifts I got. So she likes that I have position, or what she perceives as power, or she perceives as influence. But to enhance and nourish her sentiments of affection, which is a love that sees me not as influential or powerful, but completely dependent on her care, even though I'm grown up. You know, you're going to catch cold, wear something more warm. That type of mood. So that's what's being said here. And Hanuman Prasad Poda, we don't have time to give many, many references from the Bhagavatam, where the gopis are cognizant of Krishna's glories. But he makes the point, in Madhurya, in the intimacy, it's, one is cognizant, but it's not a dominant cognizance. And the example, you have to see this in India, when you're cooking a big feast, and it's like 100 gallons of milk, and they put it in a big pot, and the milk has to boil, and the cook can't stay by the, you know, stirring it all the time, and he doesn't want it to overflow, they throw some straw or grass in it. And it's an interesting phenomena. When it has the grass in it, the milk will not overflow. And you'll see that, you know, how milk is, you'll just see grass like occasionally come up and then it'll immediately disappear. So that's the gopi sense of aishwarya or opulence. They're cognizant of it, but barely cognizant of it. But somehow or other, that cognizance of their love keeps it at a level of selflessness and purity. And then it says that love, bereft of this knowledge that God is God, is of the same category as the love for a paramour. And in that love, the sentiment and feeling that I am happy by the happiness of my beloved does not exist purely. As soon as you get away from the cognizance of God, somehow or other, an element of temporality and selfishness enters into that relationship. To the extent that it's not connected and not cognizant, there's something else that enters, which is, this is for my pleasure. This is for my senses. So it's saying that for the gopis to have that madhurya, there must be this cognizance. Okay, 1 second. Any questions?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj. This is Gail.
Gail, I'm so relieved that I had a class again after a couple of weeks, you know, time.
Yeah, can imagine.
Just that I was able to complete it.
Hmm.
Okay, Gail. Hare Krishna.
Yeah, from the you mentioned this last point from the beginning of the class, and I've been wanting to ask ever since, you know, I'm dying to understand why, you know, this lack of connection or lack of awareness of God's position necessarily makes temporality and especially selfishness enter into the relationship. Why is it not possible to love selflessly even if you don't know that his... Because, you know, the gopis, you know, their glory is the fact that, you know, they don't care about his, you know, opulence or whatever. They just love the personality. You know, and that's, but you always call that as Kevala Bhakti, you know? And so that seems to almost contradict this concept. That,
well,
you know.
Let me say this, Gail. I'm dealing with these verses, right? I first wanted to figure out what they said because that other point is so prominent, predominant. I first wanted to figure out that point because, and the point is predominant that the higher the love, the less the awareness of greatness comes into effect. In fact, if there's too much awareness of greatness, right, then the sweetness generally recedes.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's so great. Anyway, it doesn't recede with the gopi. So I really struggled with this. And then in my research, I've just come to the point that this is actually what it says, and then confirmed by the commentary of Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, and also confirmed by what I heard from various sadhus in Vrindavan, as my memory is there, that there has to be Aishwarya. Now that it's confirmed that this is the philosophy, I'm trying to figure out why myself. I'm actually just coming to that point, and now I'm going to consult more with people and think about it a little bit differently, a little bit more deeply, why that's a kind of necessity.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and I really haven't dug my mind into it. You know, it's something to the effect that there's actually a relationship. You know, once things become divorced from God. You know, let me see. It said something here. It said, let me just read what they say here and see if something comes. This is this Hanumasad Poda. He says, without the knowledge of glory, love of women directed towards a man other than a husband is like the love for a paramour. That love in which exists complete surrender, which is not tainted by the least odor of worldly interest, can manifest itself towards God alone. Even though love, born towards God in any way, knowingly or unknowingly, does not become fruitless, yet there is a peculiarity in the love directed towards him knowingly. What an infinite joy we derive from the mere thought that God is our beloved Lord. How great and indescribable then be the joy of those who may actually happen to attain God in the form of their supreme beloved. The gopis had the proud privilege of enjoying this supremely pure and divine bliss. This was why the great sage Sukadeva, liberated soul, related this sacred story of divine love to Emperor Pariksit, who was awaiting his death. This love of the gopis, therefore, accompanied as it was with the knowledge of divine glory, was the purest in its character. Adulterous persons, being pressed by passion, love their paramour for their own pleasure alone. Nay, for the gratification of their own senses, they experience no joy in the joy of their beloved. Such a sentiment did not exist in the love of the gopis. In worldly love, born of lust, the beloved man is the paramour, and there is a desire for physical contact with him. In the case of the gopis, however, the beloved was God himself, the soul of the universe, and there was no desire for physical contact lurking anywhere in their hearts. The gopis merely longed for the pleasure of Sri Krishna. Whatever they possessed, their body, mind, intellect, physical charm, youth, wealth, and life in itself, stood offered to their beloved Sri Krishna as accessories for his worship. They longed to make Sri Krishna happy by offering their all to him. That alone which brought happiness to Sri Krishna, they felt it to be their dharma. They experienced supreme joy in that alone. Besides, they did not conceive of anything else whatsoever. Far from having a desire in their own mind for happiness springing from another source. Herein lies the difference between love and sensuality. Sensuality seeks self-gratification through others, whereas love longs to make the beloved happy through itself, and thus to rejoice in seeing indeed the beloved happy. Let me see. Dedication of all their possessions to Sri Krishna, the feeling of extreme restlessness of forgetting Sri Krishna for a moment, perfect knowledge about Sri Krishna's majesty and glory, and feeling exultant in the happiness of Sri Krishna alone. These are the four dominating characteristics in the love of the gopis. The love of the gopis is supremely sacred and transcendental. May Sri Krishna take pity on those who smell sin or adultery in it. Anyway, in terms of an absolute, you know, it's I'm going to apply my mind to it. I'm going to discuss others and see if I can make a connection.
Well,
right
please
now,
remember
I have
me if you ever figure.
I have a scent of it. A scent of understanding, not to the level of a perfect expression yet. Okay.
Where did you just read from just now?
I read from the commentary from Hanuman Prasad Poda. Now I don't even know if he's a pure bhakta or what, but I'm trying to put together these commentaries because I want to write a content. Well, I've actually been doing it, so hopefully it'll be out soon. But these verses were very, very difficult for me. But I had to explain them today. I'll talk about them further on Wednesday, because that's what I'm up to in Narada Bhakti Sutras. Gail, how's the reception?
Great.
It's great, yeah. I worked really hard, you know, to get kind of a phone and to get, like, a cheap thing, because when I was in Moscow, right, someone gave me an iPhone. I mean, they took such pity on me when they saw my clunker of a computer. Honestly speaking, there was tears of compassion. So, no, I'm serious. I had the worst clunker of a computer. I mean, people would literally cry when they would see it. No, again, I'm serious. And, you know, so someone kind of gave me an iPhone. So I got this Russian technician. Somehow, I don't even know what a SIM card is, but this guy, when you come to Vrindavan, he has a machine that cuts down the SIM card that fits the iPhone, because the iPhone SIM card is different. But I don't know what it is. So he cuts it, and he sets me up, right? So I can do everything with this. I can just plug my computer. I also got a new computer. I can plug it into the iPhone, and then I have internet access and everything set up. And then the only plan you could get, it would cost me like you know, about 20 cents a minute. So I told the guy, this is not satisfactory, you know. So he went around, so he found another company, but it doesn't work on the iPhone. So he got me like a separate little, cheap little plastic phone, but it seems to be working, so I'm kind of happy about that. Mm. I'm just showing you all the effort I make, Gail, to do these classes.
I know what these classes mean to you, Maris. I get it.
Mean to me? I thought it should be something for you, too. Okay, anybody else like to say hello?
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Hi, Krishna Maharaj.
Wow, great to hear from you. And I believe, maybe I'm wrong, that you may be here. Okay, that's great. Well, I'll be looking forward to you. Hopefully, I'll be here. I don't see any reason why I should if it's the end of December. And I want to take you to this Gregorian chants, the sadhu, the mystical place. Yeah. Okay.
Wonderful.
Thank you. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna. I'll write to you with our dates.
Okay. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj. Chaitanya Priya.
Oh, okay, from Seattle. Great. So we're linked up again by this. I know it's been a week or two. Thank you. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna, Maharaj.
Is that the saintly voice of Mother Indrani? Thank you.
And thank you for your efforts in teaching.
Okay, great. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Maharaj, please accept my most humble obeisances. This is Nanda Durlal.
Oh, wow. Nanda Durlal. Hare Krishna.
I sincerely...
What's that?
Thanks that I could hear you, because last week also I couldn't, I know that you had problem and I got the email.
Yeah, yeah, that's great. You know, when I was in Washington, I was trying to figure out if I can come your way, but it was literally about 5 hours south of where I was. But maybe next year we'll have to figure out a way.
Okay, Miles,
okay.
Please. We're looking forward to.
Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hare Krishna Guru Maharaj.
Well, I hear Rajaradhe and I hear Henry. Thank you all for coming on. That's great. These are the backbone of the program. It's great. Wow, I feel so happy to be back again because we got cut off. Anybody else like to say hello?
Hey, Krishna Maharaj, it's Gopa Kishore.
Who's that? Oh, Gopa.
Gopa.
Okay. Wow.
Nice to hear
great.
From you from yeah. Govardhan.
I'll tell you, Govardhan, I mean, I went out today. It was quite a yogi, 6 hours with these people, but they were so enthusiastic and so cooperative, it was a breeze. Okay. Anybody else like to say hello?
Haribo Maharaj.
Is that you, Shastra?
Yes, Maharaj.
Okay, great. Great. Yeah, looking forward to that Puri Yatra.
Yeah.
I assume everything's set with that. And I keep on hearing various people who do want to come to it. Yeah. Okay. That's great. Anybody else like to say hello? Okay. Well, we'll see you all next Wednesday and Sunday. I'm pretty excited about how I was set up for this. And, I believe it's a pretty cheap plan. Last year I had some problems. It was expensive, so this should work. Okay, Vanchakopa Thurubhya Sakapasandubhya Vajopati Karampavya.